From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, Deep South Barrels presents What Are the Odds Wednesday? This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com.
AGE, factory approved warehouse outlet.
Here's Fred Fowler and AJ Hoffman.
Oh, no, it's not. No Fred and AJ today. What are the odds? Wednesday on the Blitz. What are the odds? You got two black men on the radio at the same
time. Very, very slim in this market.
Indeed it is, but we're going to have a good time. I am Jerome Solomon, that other voice you heard, Moise Kapinda Bauer. Hit us on Twitter, at Jerome Solomon, at Moise Kapinda Bauer. Zhong Li is in charge, as always. We'll be here for 3 hours because Fred and AJ, the boys from the Blitz, those degenerates, are on their way to Las Vegas where they'll be doing the show for the rest of the week. So, you know, they just decide they get to take a day off and travel to Vegas as if they can't. All the flights to Vegas, all the times where they could go, they're like, let's just fly right in the middle of the show. It's not a big deal. We'll just go. And you know what, John? I ran into David Gao on the way in, and he's like, what's going on? I'm like, well, I'm subbing on the Blitz today. He's like, where are those guys? So the boss doesn't even know they're taking the day off. Or do they have that kind of pull around here now?
I think that was the only flight that wasn't too late, and they couldn't find a flight that left after the show.
Oh, they don't want to fly too late. Oh, that's cute.
I don't know. I think that's what it was.
Man, proper execution is flying at night, so you can get there at night and do everything you need to do the first night you get there.
They're going to be up all night anyway, and don't get me started on some of Fred and his Las Vegas stories. 713-780-3776 is your number, 713-780-ESPN. Chris Broussard of ESPN will be joining us at in the middle of this hour to talk a little Rockets basketball and NBA basketball. He's their NBA insider. Lauren Leal will come in the middle hour and hang out with us here on the show. But again, Moise Kapinda and I will have a good time. I was cracking up when you tweeted out a little earlier that the particular Tupac song, and I'm always defenseless because whenever I hear that song, I think of Udonis Haslam. Are you familiar with Udonis and that song?
No, I'm not.
Well, Udonis is as real as it gets. Yeah. And there's been a whole lot of these real conversations here in the last few days, especially with Allen Iverson being inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, and him being the realest guy ever and all that. And, you know, I don't get into the ESTs too often because, you know, everybody's real at who they are. Some real people are just real fake. But Udonis, when he got married, there's a lot to his story that's just really fascinating and entertaining. But as it goes to that song, he kisses his bride 4 times and they're Mr. and Mrs. And then DJ cranks it up for them to walk down the aisle. Ain't nothing but a gangsta party. Now that's real.
My man.
And that was just a couple of years ago. 713-780-3776. That voice you heard coming in was Draymond Green talking about the Warriors being bored. They're talking out of both sides of their mouth now because they're saying they're, you know, distracted by the push to catch the Bulls, or at least, you know, match or beat the Bulls' record of 72 wins in one season. And then he's saying they're bored with the regular season. I don't think it can be both, right?
No, absolutely not. But to his point, I think we've all been kind of conscientious observers in terms of what they're doing. And it's pretty clear their focus has not been in the last few weeks of the season. And when you get out to the start they've gotten out to, and you play the level of basketball they've played for the balance of the season, and you get to that point where it's the dog days of the season, and you know you're the number one seed, and you know you have home court advantage, and you know you're trying to repeat as champions, it becomes difficult to finish that thing strong. I mean, it is what it is. And as much as they've talked on one hand about pursuing a record, and then Steve Kerr on the other hand has said it's not that important, and they've kind of vacillated in terms of how they really feel about it, it has been clear to me they're not playing very consistent or impressive basketball down the stretch. And part of that is probably when you're at that ilk and you played as well as they played for really 2 seasons now, you're ready for the postseason.
Well, but beyond being ready for the postseason, isn't there also a potential element of, you just, it's it's not possible to play as well as they played for as long as they've played and not have some bumps in the road.
And they're getting all the bumps now, which is kind of interesting to get them at the end of the season. But it's weird to me, and you mentioned the Bulls, and people kind of forget this. They lost two games in a row at home at the very end of the season. They were in the same position that basically the Warriors were in and the Spurs are in now in terms of finishing the year undefeated at home, mm-hmm. and then got to the very end of the year and lost two games in a row at home. So
yeah, most people don't know that.
And it's difficult to maintain, and man, the average fan doesn't want to hear this nonsense, blah, blah, blah. But it's difficult to maintain that level of play and consistency and concentration for 82 games over 6 months. It's hard. These guys, their attention span wanes. They have other things on their mind. They don't bring a level of intensity every game. And when it happens, then you lose at home to the Timberwolves, yeah. which had never – a 15-point lose to the Timberwolves at home, that's a layup. And that, the fact they lost that game more than the other loss they had the other night, it resonates with me that they're just ready to get to the postseason and kind of get this last week over.
I mean, the Timberwolves came to play, too. I mean, and that's another thing when you're the Warriors. You're going up against teams who, you know – their life dream right now, their current, you know, highlight of a season would be beating a team like the Warriors. But you say difficult to maintain that for 6 months and that intensity and at that level. Well, how are the Rockets managing to maintain being good and average throughout the season?
Exactly. I mean,
they have done it extremely well. They've been exactly who they are from day one. I don't see why everybody can't be exactly who they are all season.
It's so weird to recognize where they are now, that if they win this game tonight against Dallas in Dallas at 8:30, they're putting themselves in a position really to kind of walk into the postseason. Saying that, they've always done just enough to confuse you and confound you with their performances. So now, okay, Dallas is the last team that legitimately has a postseason spot on the line that they're going to play. The last four games are against teams that are hopelessly out of the playoff picture. You thinking they can go five in a row on top of the one they won the other night against Oklahoma City and finish your six games in a row going to the postseason, but they're the Rockets. And they've done
haven't won six in a row all season.
And they've lost twice to the Brooklyn Nets, and they've lost three times to the Denver Nuggets. And they do things that make you take notice in terms of what is up with this team, to your point, and it's been like that all year. So how can you be confident about their performance tonight against Dallas and then moving forward when you really don't know what they're going to do from game to game, from half to half, from quarter to quarter?
On a What Are the Odds Wednesday here on the Blitz, 713-780-3776. Bovada put out NBA playoff odds and championship odds, et cetera. It'll surprise some people because many people here just pretty much considered the Rockets to be dead. But odds to win the Western Conference, amazingly, the Rockets have the fifth best odds of winning the Western Conference. I mean, it's not good odds at 50-1, but still at number five for the Rockets. Interesting. Of the three teams battling for the playoffs, and it's the Mavs and the Jazz obviously going challenging with the Rockets for those two playoff spots, 7 and 8 spot, for the right to get, you know, the butts beat against the Warriors and the Spurs, theoretically. The odds are that the Rockets and Jazz will be the two teams that get in. They're in, yes, on the playoffs at minus 400 and plus 250 on the no, whereas the Mavs are only a yes 105 and a minus 135 on the no. That's because the Mavs close with the Rockets tonight. They got Memphis on Friday, the Clippers at the Clippers on Sunday, at the Jazz the next day on Monday, and their season finale against the Spurs. The Spurs will probably take that night off, but it's still the Spurs. So the Mavs have a much tougher road.
Plus, they don't have Chandler Parsons. Plus, Deron Williams has missed 7 games in a row. And I think when you look at the way Utah's played down the stretch, they're the one team that's hungry and fighting and scrapping and senses the opportunity that's ahead. And I think that won't wane in terms of their performance. And the Rockets, I think, clearly are probably the best team out of the three teams. They haven't played like it, but I think they're the best team. And maybe there's the presumption that experience kicks in at this last week and a half of the year, and they get that together and do just enough to get into the postseason to lose to the Spurs in 5 games in the first round. So I think I understand the betting line, and it would be, to me, somewhat odd if Dallas is the one team that gets in over those other two, because I think the chips are stacked, as you referenced, with their schedule, as also with their injury situation. They're the team that's kind of limping in. I know they've played well lately with J.J. Barea doing things that he always does, and that doesn't bode well for the Rockets tonight because he always does well against the Rockets. But I understand those odds because when you look at those two teams ahead of Dallas in terms of Utah and Houston, they seem like they're the best teams out of the three teams involved.
No question. And it's hard to argue that. I've been saying the Rockets are the best of the teams battling for the playoffs position for about 2 months now. and yet they're number nine right now, and they've yet to come through. Did you see what Chandler Parsons had to say to Tim McMahon of the of ESPN.com?
I did not. What did he have to home, man?
Oh, he had a lot of things to say. You'll have to pull it up because there's very interesting. Chandler's just tripping. He thinks he's a lot better player than I do, of course, but than he is on top of that. But some of the interesting things, he's going to opt out probably of his contract.
Which he should.
Why? Tell me why that is.
Because the cap is always going to be so explosive that there's the potential that someone will still overpay him. And I get that he's had two knee surgeries now and that he probably won't ever be the same player.
He had microfracture surgery last year. Mm-hmm. And now he comes back that same knee. It's a different injury this time. And he addressed that quite a bit in this interview as well. And he just said that it's not as serious. It's a, you know, piece of cake compared to what he had done last year. But
he's still a young player.
But he got a max contract last time.
Yeah, but he got a max contract for 3 years. And I think at this stage of his career, given his youth, even given his performance coming back from the knee injury, when he finally got himself back together, he played pretty well for the Mavericks. I think teams will be willing to look at a guy with his versatility in terms of scoring and defending and youth and the combination of that plus his experience in the league. I think he's going to warrant getting money. To me, he warrants getting money more than Dwight Howard warrants getting money. And that's the interesting thing to me. All this talk about him opting out from the Rockets, people being petrified of him going someplace else. And I've said this all along. Who's going to give him that money? Who's going to pay a 31-year-old broken-down center in a league that goes away from big men scoring maximum contract money for 4 or 5 years? I don't see it. I see Chandler getting that money much more readily than I see Dwight getting that money.
Hey, well, Dwight's been resting for a few weeks here. You know, the Rockets don't give him the ball. They ignore that he's on the floor. They're playing a different style of basketball, a style that I don't like and a style that I don't think is the best for this particular team even. You have Dwight. You have him playing fairly well. And people talk about, well, he hasn't developed an inside game. Well, no, that's not who he's not Hakeem Olajuwon. That's not who he is. But that doesn't mean you don't give him the ball. I don't understand how you can play with him on the court and don't feed the big man the ball. I mean, maybe that's old school to a lot of people, but that should open the floor up for other guys. But you got to give him some touches. You have to keep him active and interested and going. And that's why he's going when the season is over, because he doesn't want to play for a team that doesn't value what he does.
That's a nice selection right there, my man. See, Jong knows what time it is, and that's why I appreciate coming in here and working with him all the time. We come in here and work with him. We'll address Dwight a little bit later as we get into the nuts and bolts of the show.
A few Patriots fans are so upset over Deflategate. They did something really, really stupid. We'll talk about that when we come back. Moise Kapinda-Bauer, Jerome Solomon, 713-780, ESPN. The Blitz will be back in a minute. Chris Broussard of ESPN will join us.
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, Deep South Barrels presents What Are the Odds Wednesday? This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Pick off your weekend right. Have lunch out with ESPN 97.5 each Friday. John and Raheel, followed by Unfiltered. We'll broadcast live beginning at 10 a.m. from Nick's Place. Meet us at the best Italian food and drink spot in Houston, 2713 Rock Ridge at Nick's Place every Friday afternoon. 713-780-ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. MK, did you see what a few Patriots fans did in response to Deflategate?
Why are they still talking about this? A, to answer your question, no. B, why are they still discussing this?
Well, because the draft is coming up.
Yeah.
And the Patriots don't have a first-round draft pick.
They'll be fine. That organization is so well-run, and it's been so well-run for so many years that I think every team builds through the draft, and I understand that. And your depth and your resolve and the well-being of your organization is based on players you pick up through the draft. But they've done so many things right for such a long period of time. Them missing out on one draft pick is not going to kill them. And I get that they feel like they've been cheated by the league, and they probably rightfully feel that way. But to still be up in arms over something that happened in the past that really has like impacted them moving forward, and I don't think them losing a pick this year is really going to be that much of a detriment to the organization, given how well they're run. I'm still amazed that they just constantly discuss this.
Well, see, that's your problem. See, you don't feel this pain. You know, you don't understand what it's like to be a New England Patriots fan and have to deal with this disgusting treatment from the NFL. So a group of fans, seven of them, in fact, including one a season ticket holder who, I'll tell you about him in a second. They filed a complaint on Tuesday in U.S. District Court in Boston and says the NFL made an arbitrary and capricious decision to revoke the pick in this month's draft, even though there was no proof that the team deliberately deflated balls in that AFC championship game two seasons ago. And so they allege fraud, negligence, intentional inflection of emotional distress, and racketeering. And one fan, one of the season ticket holders who's part of the lawsuit, says the scandal has left, and this is kind of emotional, his seven-year-old daughter is disillusioned because of the NFL action in this case.
Why would a seven-year-old really care about this? A, this happened when she was five. So B, she has no context, and C, she really doesn't care.
See, again, you're not feeling this. You don't feel this pain.
You know, they should rest on their laurels of being the best organization in the league for the last 15 years.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you talk about scoreboard. They have the ultimate scoreboard. Why are you still crying about this? It's not going to impact you. You're going to lose the draft pick. You'll be all right. I think they can move forward with what they get in the second round on and be just fine as an organization. They're going to be the favorite team in AFC again next year.
These fools are worse, dude. They even include Robert Kraft as a defendant in the lawsuit, the owner of the Patriots.
What did he do?
Because they say he did not put up enough of a fight to go against the league's punishment. Defendant Robert Kraft had remedies to attempt to get the plaintiff's draft pick back, but he chose his fellow billionaire owners above the plaintiffs and fellow fans, says the lawsuit.
That's absurd. Clearly, of all people, to not choose other billionaires over his team, that particular team is not going to be Robert Kraft. I get that they're butt hurt. I understand that their feelings have been crushed by what Roger Goodell did, but it did not impact them that year. They won a Super Bowl. It did not impact them last year because it was still very good. They were within basically a deflected pass in the end zone for getting back to the Super Bowl and beating maybe an overrated Carolina Panthers team. And I think they'll be right back on the cusp of doing so. Again, look, they'll be fine. I'm not going to dismiss the fact that they have a legitimate grudge in terms of feeling the way they feel because they should have their draft pick because there was no evidence found and they are justified in feeling the way they feel. At some point, you got to turn the page.
Yeah, but grow up here. Yeah, give me a break. Why you throw Carolina Panthers in this? You get like Geraldo Rivera, who tweeted out the other night that the Carolina Panthers did lose the national championship. Villanova won it.
So messed up. But seriously, it's weird you bring that up because I was thinking about them earlier today randomly. All the showboating they did. And I'm as impartial as they come. I really didn't care who won that game. But you set yourself up for being hated upon
You sound like an old man now. And you can't jump onto the old man. You kind of in the middle. I know you straddling the line between, you know, get off my lawn and I'm gonna walk around with my hair looking like it ain't done because that's how y'all do things. That's how young brothers look nowadays.
But my point is, they could have responded better to their success through the course of the season than they did. And then when you get that comeuppance, you can't cry like a bunch of babies when you get your behind whipped on the biggest stage of the season. So I don't feel sorry for them, and that they deserve all the pot shots they get from here moving forward until they rectify the situation of coming back this coming season and doing what they could not do last year and finish the job.
Crying specifically, and I know you meant crying as whining more than actual tears. Fred and AJ talked about crying yesterday, and I think they just butchered the entire conversation. AJ cries for 3 hours a day on the show about everything in the world, Mr. Complainer that he is. He thought that North Carolina had too many tears following the loss on Monday night.
How can you have too many tears on a gut-wrenching defeat like that?
Even if it's not a gut-wrenching defeat, that just exacerbates it. But they put in 6 months of work to try to win a championship. Their championship was there, and that's as close as most of them are ever going to get to. Well, it's certainly the only championship they could have won this year, and it's gone. So 6 months of work lost out the window, and 5 minutes later, there are cameras in your face. And if you put that much into it, I can see you tearing up about the loss after. It's ridiculous for
specifically
for
that team, preseason number one, all of the expectations, underplaying or underperforming through the course of the year, catching your stride at the end of the year, winning the regular season, winning the ACC championship, getting into the tournament, kicking behind and taking names. And then you get right to that moment and you really get outplayed by an inferior team, not grossly inferior, but an inferior team. Your coach, who says he's smarter than everybody in the world about basketball, doesn't coach you well enough down the stretch to put you in a position to win. and then you lose like that. Out of all the things that happened in the second half of that game, I was really surprised that they got themselves back into it and got themselves in a position for a Marcus Payne shot that, to tie that game.
Come back from a 10-point deficit.
Against that team.
At the that
way,
point.
The way Villanova squeezes Villanova the life out of you defensively.
They didn't miss any free throws. Yeah. They just caught him. I mean, they just caught him. And, I mean, the ridiculous shot that Marcus Page made.
But that was Carolina at its best. At that stretch of time, that was the Carolina we all expected to see through the course of the game, and they finally showed up. And then to lose it like that, to not play defense on that last play, to give it that wide-open look at the end, man, I'm going to cry. And I ain't mad at them for crying about the way they lost that game.
Generally speaking, you're a crier?
I get a little bit emotional the older you get. I'll be the first to admit that.
Really? Yeah. What do you cry about?
You know, movies get me a lot of times. But you know, but I'm
I mean,
a, but I'm a
you big, do realize,
I'm, but I'm a huge movie guy.
You realize they're just movies, right?
Yeah, it's the real life, though.
No. If they're movies.
If
they're
you
actors.
Inject yourself into the moment of the movie,
are we talking becomes, documentaries or are we talking
documentaries, especially? Oh yeah, absolutely. Because that's a real life situation.
Movies, I've never understood how movies make people cry. I mean, it just in a general sense, I can understand if Brian Song hits you. You know, on the wrong day or something, you know. Okay, I'll let that slide.
You don't get yourself emotionally invested in watching a movie?
Not particularly.
At all? See, that's the difference.
I mean, I enjoy it. I mean, I can get entertained by it, but no. I mean, maybe as emotionally invested, if it's a true story, I'll get into that.
I think if it's a well-told story, it doesn't have to be a true story.
Yeah, but I mean, it's far more likely that I'll invest emotion into a true story.
I will grant you
that. A story that's real, you know, that has something behind it. Otherwise, I'm into the entertainment of it, you know.
I'll say this. I didn't even see Bryce Johnson crying because he played his behind off for a long stretch of time, and to see him basically just break down on the sideline.
Well, yeah, you know, he should have been crying the way he played when the game started. And he's not that good,
no,
for one. So he should have been crying because his best basketball days are over. You know, he won't
player.
Be able to do that on the next level, and I'm not rooting against him. I have no feelings toward that at all. But man, he's not that good. I'm not impressed with his ability.
It was weird seeing a game on that stage really with just a bunch of college players. I think we all get so wrapped up in projecting guys. There weren't very many projectable players in that game, and it was kind of surprising to me, especially considering where we were last year with Duke and Wisconsin and all the guys, the young players on Duke, who really show it out and then got to the next level and look like they may have a future. And then now this year with both Villanova and North Carolina, some experienced players on both those teams, and I don't see any star players in the NBA on either one of those.
Yeah,
rosters.
And that running narrative of, oh, this is the year of the senior and this just shows that the one and done isn't all of that. No. These guys couldn't go pro early. They weren't good enough.
That's why
they're not one and done. That's the issue. Buddy Hield is one heck of a player, and I would draft him really high in the draft. NBA told him last year he was going to be a second-round pick.
Even with that ball
handling?
That's
why he didn't come out. Yeah, even with that ball handling, because they don't play that good a defense in the NBA. You don't get traps and presses in full court. No, yeah, that's okay. James Harden turned the ball over left and right.
But he handles the ball better than Buddy Hield. And I blanched the comparisons to Steph Curry because Steph Curry is a far better ball handler than Buddy Hield.
Oh, whoever made that comparison?
People are trying to make that because he shot the ball so good this season. Oh, this Steph
Curry. That's ridiculous. I'm not even certain that that's the real three-point shooter that he is. The dude didn't shoot three-pointers like that when he came in. He has improved and continued to improve. He shot lights out this year. Is that really who he is? Has he reached that level where he's going to be that kind of a three-point shooter? I don't know, but I like it. I like his mentality. I like his approach. Ball handling, I'm just not that worried about. The NBA, they're not attacking you on the dribble like that enough where it's going to be that big of a problem. And that's why you have teammates. That's why you have other guys that handle the ball. Unless you want to be James Harden and hog the damn ball the whole time.
I think I'm far more dubious on him than you are.
No, the guy can play. 713-780-ESPN is your number. 713-780-3776. Jerome Solomon along with Maurice Kapinda-Bauer sitting in for the guys on the Blitz. We'll be back in a minute.
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, Deep South Barrels presents What Are the Odds Wednesday? This is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Brought to you by AcceptanceAppliance.com. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
No, Fred and AJ, Jerome Solomon, along with MK Bauer sitting in today. Joining us now, a man from ESPN, Chris Broussard. What's up, Chris? How's it going, bro?
I'm great. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Hey, let's jump right into Dwight Howard talk. I know you familiar and in with, you know, some of his people and his camp. He's he started talking a little bit here in the last couple of weeks, and it's certainly pretty obvious he's going to opt out of his contract with the Rockets. But he's also seemed to be not at all pleased he's not getting the ball, and I can't blame him for that. What is your take on it?
Well, I can't blame him either. I mean, I think he's exactly right on the money. Now, look, I know he's not Hakeem Olajuwon. He doesn't need to be getting it dumped into him, you know, 15 times a game. But four shots, five shots, I mean, that's about what he's averaging over the last 3 or 4 weeks. It's ridiculous. And, you know, now look, some of that's on him. He has to be more aggressive. He has to call for the ball, go get the ball. And you can get the ball off the glass. His rebounding is actually still pretty strong. Mm-hmm. But you need to maybe go get some more offensive rebounds, run the floor more. That's how they want to get him the ball. They want him running the floor, you know, trying to beat the defense down the floor in some early offense, and he's not doing it. But they have got to find some type of balance in getting Dwight Howard the basketball. I'm not saying he's what he was in his prime, but I still think he's capable of averaging 16, 17 points a game. And obviously still rebounding the ball well, over 11 a game. So I don't blame him for the way they're misusing him. But I'll tell you this, if I were him, and I'm not saying he shouldn't opt out, but he does need to, it shouldn't be a no-brainer. He needs mm-hmm. to think about it, because the way he's been playing over the last month, because of his image problems and people, you know, thinking he's childish and not necessarily wanting to deal with the lot that comes with Dwight Howard, he may not get that max offer he's banking on, especially the way his numbers have been over the last 3 weeks. I mean, he's averaging about 8 points a game, you know. I know he doesn't really want to stay in Houston because of the way they're using him, but if he were to opt in, they would have no choice but to figure it out and utilize him better than they have this season. And it might give him a chance to reestablish himself as one of the top centers in the league and then be in position to get big money. Even if it's not a max deal, mm-hmm. he'll be at a level of his career over 10 years. He would be, you know, the cap's going to jump another $20 million after a $20 million jump this summer. Even if he didn't get the max, he could still get a hefty amount of money.
Yeah, he won't be going broke anytime soon.
So there's a risk. Mm-hmm. But he's not looking anything remotely like a max player right now, and that could hurt him on the market.
Yeah, Dwight's in the last six games, he's averaging less than five shots a game, but he's still pulling down double-figure rebounds. But when you're playing, you know, 28, 30 minutes a night and you're getting, you know, less than six shots, less than five shots, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, Chris, you kind of led me into my next question, and I'm curious in your opinion about this. What strikes me is that he may be in a surprise when he hits the open market, not only in terms of the money, but in terms of finding teams who want his services for their particular squad. Do you think that with the way the NBA has kind of gone small and the way bigger players are being underutilized, particularly centers in traditional roles as centers, do you think he's going to be in for a shock if he hits the open market and sees that there aren't going to be that many teams kind of bantering for his services?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's no question. Now, somebody will want him. They may not want him at max money. I wouldn't, as much as I like Dwight, but I'm one of the few that defends him on TV. But I would not give him the max money for any significant amount of years, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, it's been talked about Orlando. You know, I'm on the record as saying I think that would be a good move for both sides. I think for Dwight, he recognizes that he never should have left Orlando, simple as that. Orlando has been irrelevant since the day he walked out the door. And not that he would lead them to be a contender, but he would certainly, I think, make them a playoff team in the East, and they would be relevant again. One executive in the league told me this. He says, you either want great basketball or great theater. And they would get great theater if they had Dwight back in Orlando and the fans would care again.
That's definitely one of those things where, and wherever Dwight went, he would bring some attention to a particular squad. Now, real quick.
I'm not so sure. I mean, he would initially.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not so sure anymore that, you know, he has really dropped off in the way he's been playing. Like, let's say New York. That's another team that's been talked about as having interest in Dwight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be. It'd be a nice press conference and all that. But after a short time, if he's not playing well, I don't think it would be pretty there, and it wouldn't be good theater. But you know, it's going to be tough, like you said. I mean, you really have to, you know, weigh whether or not you want to pay this guy with all the issues that come along with Dwight Howard. And I agree. I do think that's why I said he has to at least do his homework. It's not just an automatic that I'm opting out if I'm him.
Yeah.
Do your homework. See who's going to be interested in you. See what they might pay you. And, you know, look, Houston's waiting for him to opt out. But if he doesn't opt out, you're going to have to deal with it, and you got to find a way to utilize this guy for the betterment of your team.
Chris Broussard of ESPN joining us here. ESPN has the Rockets game tonight against the Mavericks in Dallas at 8:30 tip on ESPN. You talk about the Rockets seeming like, go. Well, then what the hell are they going to do in the offseason when you lose a guy who – they were building their team, not building it around. Certainly he was one of their two superstars here the last couple of years. Where does that leave them?
Well, the big fish, and we know they're going to go after Kevin Durant. I don't think they get him. I think they understand it's somewhat of a long shot. But you got to make your push for him, and their chances of getting him are probably better without Dwight. I can't say that for a fact, but – they may be. Look, Clint Capella is not Dwight Howard, but he plays with energy, and he's athletic. He's getting better, and his price tag is much better. So, you know, there's going to be an Al Horford, a Hassan Whiteside, you know, Rajon Rondo, guys like that. I don't know that there's a – if it's not Kevin Durant, then there's not a free agent that's changing their fortunes. Mm-hmm. In any significant way. I mean, let's face it, just a year ago, they were in the conference finals. So, you know, this season has just been a mess for them all the way around. They never should have fired Kevin McHale. And I like J.B. Bickerstaff. I think he's done a pretty good job. But I just still don't think McHale deserved to be fired. I think he had done enough to earn, you know, the benefit of the doubt. And I think you see that even with a coaching change, they really haven't played much better. And it's just been a disaster, and they got a lot of work to do. I mean, when Michael Beasley is essentially your second weapon,
mm-hmm.
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be a long, hard road back to championship contention for them in this offseason.
I know you got to run. One quick question on your way out. Have anything you've seen from the Warriors the last week give you any pause that whomever it is, whether it's the Mavericks, the Jazz, or the Rockets that gets that first-round playoff series against them, are going to get their butts spanked?
The Warriors?
No. The Spankies.
No, not now. I've always felt that the Spurs had a chance to beat them in the conference finals. Or I think Oklahoma City's got a good chance, you know, a chance to beat the Spurs. So I'm not saying it's a done deal that San Antonio gets there.
Right.
But I still would favor the Warriors. And but as far as the first round matchup, no. I mean, it's going to be 4 or 5 games max without question.
Chris Broussard of ESPN joining us. Thanks a lot, my man. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Later.
The Rockets tonight again at 8:30 against the Mavs. This is a big game. I mean, if they win this, they're not in, but they're so good, much closer
to being
in. They're
in a good position to be in, to feel like they're going to be safe in terms of getting in and taking care of business last four games of the year.
But, you know, that's – I mean, they're the Rockets. I mean, just, you know, they turn around and play again tomorrow in less than 24 hours with the tip tomorrow here in Houston against – what do they have? The Suns coming in?
Yeah. And they struggle with the Suns this year.
This the Rockets. Enough, yeah. I wouldn't bet on them to do anything. What are the odds Wednesday? What are the odds of me betting on them beating somebody? Zero. I don't believe in that team because that team does not believe in itself. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. This is The Blitz. We'll be back in a minute.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. For more great sports talk, try Yahoo Sports Radio 1560 AM. Two great sports stations, two presets. Lock them in.
Welcome back in. Obviously, the Blitz is all over social media. You can add us on Snapchat, ESPN 97.5. Follow us on Twitter, Degenerates 975. Personally, I'm at Jerome Solomon. MK Bauer is at Moise Kapenda, M-O-I-S-E. No, you're not. It's just Moise, right?
No, it's Moise Kapenda. No, I never go by that. That's not my name. You will never, ever, ever hear me refer to myself half my first name.
It's going to be like that, huh?
Just telling you how it is.
You seem a little sensitive. Yeah, you've been a little jumpy since I mentioned the hair thing a little while ago.
I get a little jumpy when it comes to my name.
Get a little testy with the hair thing, too.
I give people an out with the whole MK thing. I'd rather you say that.
Go MK, but you're not Moise. Nah. Well, I mean, I'm not that sensitive about it, but
I don't care.
But, no, I'm saying, I've had people go, "Hey, Jer," I'm like, "No, it's Jerome," yeah. It's, you know. But I don't get ready to squabble over dog. I mean, you know, you are buffed up over my bad. Moise Kapenda, MoiseKapenda. Not one of the few people who can say your name comfortably and not have a problem with it either. Lamont on Twitter seemed a little upset that we didn't jump at Chris for when he said that he thought J.B. Bickerstaff's done a good job. I think he has done an okay job for a first-time coach. I don't think he's done a great job.
That's the operative word. But he's been fine.
Yeah.
He's okay.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
You stroke your shoulders and you go, okay. And who's the coach next year? I think clearly he's not.
No question. I wouldn't hire him back. Yeah. But I wouldn't have hired him in the first place because I wouldn't have fired Kevin McHale in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, that's on Daryl Morey. He and I have talked about that a long time, and that's on Les Alexander. And as I've written and said before, I talked to Les Alexander the day of the firing, and I couldn't even argue with the dude. He threw a point at me that I was like, okay, I disagree, but I can't argue with you on that. He's like, Jerome, how many times I got to show up? No, we're going to get our ass kicked tonight. It's like, I guess that's a personal decision. You're right. You own the team. And he said, and it was like the game, they lost three games in a row by 20 points. Exactly. And he said he walked in there that third night and knew they were going to get dusted. And I'm like, I can't argue. If I'm the owner and I'm walking to a building and I know I'm going to get dusted, I'm firing somebody too.
but it's a two-pronged problem. If that's the issue, fine, and I will grant you that issue. But how do you hire an assistant from the same staff and expect things to change? If there's an attitude problem within the team relative to the coach, a Hall of Fame player as the coach, why would things suddenly change with an assistant with no skins on the wall coming in and being the head coach? And that was my only issue. And this is not a knock against JB. This is about the thought process, the methodology in terms of how you went about the process of going who was next. If you're really about winning now, you have to have a coach come in who commands respect and attention from that locker room and not someone who was already there when you were so concerned about getting your ass kicked every game. So that's why I blanched at what they did, and I still don't understand why they did what they did given the circumstances, and that's why they are where they are right now, still in ninth place, still an underachieving team, and nothing has really changed. And JB's been okay. He's been fine, but nothing has really changed over the course of the entire season.
Yeah, 713-780-3776, and on your point, two things. One is, I can't agree with you more on the, well, then why do you stay in-house? You know, because it's the same thing, and I said and I wrote at the time, and still amazes me that it went over and nobody really freaked out, except it seemed like me when the Texans were like, well, we're running our defensive coordinator off and we'll just boo Frank Bush up. And I was like, well, unless he was showing up at the meetings, you know, being, you know, just freaking out like this plan won't work. Why are we doing it? And if he were doing that, the defense coordinator
should have fired him
yeah. for being insubordinate. Then he was on board with the plan that wasn't working before. So why would you give him a shot at first? That just didn't make any sense. So I'm with you on that. And two, this is what I will say for sure as an owner. And you know, as soon as I get my billion, that's how I'm going to do my business. I will have a general manager that stops me from doing dumb stuff. That's the general manager's job. The general manager's job is to tell you, okay, relax. It's just 11 games in. You know, either we are who we are, or for us to get out of it, we need to stick with this guy. Now, if we're going to freak out and panic, you got a panicky general manager. He freaked out along with the owner, and you're like, let's run the guy. Then you got to go out and make
a
massive hire.
You blow everybody out. And you know who I feel sorry for, Jerome? I feel sorry for JB, because he deserves a better first opportunity than he's gotten here. By all accounts, he's going to be a good head coach. And you talk to players and other people around the league, and they speak very highly of him and feel like he deserves an opportunity. This is not the opportunity he deserved. Not in this circumstance, not with a team who undermined a head coach, not with all the expectations facing this team. And you put him in position now to where he really can't win unless they made some miraculous turnaround this season. And that wasn't going to happen with this particular squad. So I feel bad for him, because he's going to get run out of here, and it's going to be years before he gets an opportunity.
I don't know. He's so well-liked among players, and that's probably had a lot to do with why he got hired. I mean, we talked earlier about Chandler Parsons in the interview he had with
ESPN. He spoke highly of JB in the interview, yep.
Exactly. Yeah, he's like, you know, I feel bad for JB because he's a tough situation. So all the players are in on JB, and it's like, well, I don't need a coach who all the players are in on. I need a coach who the players do what the hell the coach says do. I need a coach who is in charge, not friends with everybody. And Bickerstaff is going to learn that. I mean, he's a young guy. He's an assistant. Assistants are supposed to be cool with the players. They're supposed to be,
good cop, bad
you know,
cop. Yeah.
Kind of in the way to break up, you know, the head coach riding the guy all the time. But when you step up, can you get that done? And certainly, there's no doubt in my mind, Kevin McHale would not have them coming down the floor and totally ignoring Dwight Howard the way they've done. 713-780-ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. Yeah, Lanny, we'll get to you, and I'm trying to get our text message working, so you guys can send text message to that number as well, 713-780-ESPN. Hit us on Twitter, at Jerome Solomon, at Moise Kapinda, and we'll come back. RG3 is talking about making diamonds. I'm going to tell you why that's a really good thing when we get back. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.